I hope you had a great lunch. We did here. Oh my gosh, I got to walk outside and I walked to the end of the road and I got to see Mount Rainier and it took my breath away. It brought me to tears. It's just so remarkable and huge. It's amazing. Anyway, it's probably my first time ever seeing it, like not from the sky. So it was really astonishing. So I'm kind of rolling in bliss and wonder right now, which is a good way to start the afternoon. So I have some things that I'd like to share, and then hopefully we'll have enough time for questions as well. I believe there's probably some questions that have piled up through the online portal as that. So we'll see what I can get to this afternoon. I wanted to just briefly discuss what we were opening into this morning with Mana Maya. That's when we're shifting from, if we think about it from a practice of mindfulness, from, you know, the first stage of mindfulness is learning to focus your concentration and attention and to be able to establish that in a focused way. And that's for the first five steps of IRS, that's really what we're doing, right? Through the three steps of Sankalpa, body sensing and breath sensing is just helping us to learn how to refocus, how to zoom in and hopefully stay with something so that it's not just intellectual, but we're moving down and we're feeling it as sensation. So we're having that embodied experience. The second, if you recall, the second phase of mindfulness is called creatively mindfulness. And that's where we can focus our attention for a period of time where we can become really one-pointed. Right? So in order to be able to stay with the stickiness of emotions where we're headed tomorrow when we go into the land of core beliefs and memories and images and thoughts, those all become more settled to be able to track sensorially in our body. And they're also stickier. They tend to pull us out into our thinking mind. And so it makes sense that we have to develop a greater sense of our capacity in meditation to stay focused for longer periods of time, to be able to actually feel it somatically in the body and to see what messages it has to reveal that are separate from just our conditioned way that we would normally think about it. So I wanted to highlight that as well. Another thing that we can do in IRES, and we do this a lot more in level two, but I'm just going to mention it here, is we can build continuums or hierarchies of emotion or beliefs in our classes. And that can be really helpful if we have students that come in that maybe don't have a wide range. They're unable to access a wide range of emotions. Let's say they're a little bit more limited. Or also to be able, if it's somebody who rushes to anger or rushes to intense anxiety or panic, and they don't have that experience of the more nuanced emotions that can build, that can lead to that sense of panic. This is a way that we can slow down the process there or help them. They can learn how to slow down their inner process and maybe track more. And so sometimes in our class, we might be able to build a continuum when we're interviewing for emotions, let's say. And you might be able to ask, what are some emotions? And then we can put it on a continuum. So if we had a horizontal line and we had anger in the middle of the line here. I'm torn between trying to do this. Normally I would do this on the flip chart, but I don't think they'll be able to see it at home. Yeah. Could you angle it a little bit differently? Janice, would you write this up for me since I have to hold a mic? Would you be willing to do that? Oh, I feel very spoiled. Thanks. This is great. So if we put anger as, if you do a horizontal line and we put anger right in the center, they won't be able to see it, but we're putting anger in the center. What are some emotions that might be a little less intense or more intense than anger? So we're going to put it on a continuum, right? From feelings that would build up to anger and feelings that may be more intense than anger. And maybe we'll start on the less intense side, okay? And for those of you that are at home, you could drop this in the chat box and Denny Shea will bring that forward. Yeah, Kristen. Frustration and irritability. So those are two different ones. And we could put those, since Janice is up doing this for us, she gets to decide where she's going to plot it. irritability. Yeah. So she put frustration a little bit more as more intense and irritability as less intense. Was there another one that came through in the chat box, Denny Shea?
We had irritated, but we also had annoyed.
Annoyed. Yeah. And so we might make that a little bit closer to anger. Yeah, Mimi. Rejection. Yeah. And if you were to feel rejected, which can be its own emotion, but how else would you feel if you were feeling rejected? In isolation, rejection. Yep. And would that feel less intense for you than anger or more intense? It would lead up to anger. Yep. Less intense. Great. Yep. So rejection. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. Anything else?
We have peeved.
Peeved. That's a good one. We all voted. Lots of people said that's a good one. Great. And, you know, we might even start on, if we were off way over here, we might start with just warmth, which isn't necessarily an emotion, but we're getting to that felt sense where we can just start to feel that something's happening in here. I'm starting to warm up, right? And yeah, irritation, frustration, peeved. We could throw edginess on there, annoyed, rejection, anger, mm-hmm. Rage. So now we're probably getting on the other side of anger, right? So now we're moving towards the more intense side. So we have rage. What else?
We had ticked off. I'm not sure.
Ticked off?
Where it would fall on the anger side.
Okay. Rage is over here. Ticked off somewhere around, maybe that's a little less intense, maybe between annoyed and rejection, or maybe it's even less. See, the beauty is you get to decide. Or whoever your students would be, they get to decide, right? That's the point. They get to see this continuum for themselves. So for more intense, we have rage. What else?
Furious.
Furious, yeah. Wrath. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Aggression.
Aggression. Mm-hmm. Well, and if we become physically aggressive, that may start to move all the way over here, right? Mm-hmm. How about hatred, right? Now we're getting over here where it could possibly lead towards violence, which is one end of the spectrum. So we can do this with emotions. We can do this with beliefs. We can do this with sensation, that people, if they're starting to try to meet sensations in their body that are pretty intense and they'd like to break that up. And so we could then support our students so that they're not flooding themselves. They don't have to, when we're offering a class, go over to rage or furious or livid or anything over here. They can start to see that there's a way that we're helping them to build emotional regulation and emotional intelligence and self-regulation to be able to track what's happening in their body. And then they get to always choose when and how they want to weave in the inner resource. And this is a great thing where we're interviewing our students and it gets them ready for a practice. So emotion's kind of in the field, if you will. It's in the room, it's in their mind and body. And it also allows them to know that they can take care of themselves, that they have a sense of control, right? Which is really trauma-informed. People want control, they want predictability, they want choice. This allows that when we offer this up in this way. Okay. Any questions about that? Yeah, Leandra. Yeah, so Leandra was asking if we stick to a theme or if we could do a multitude of emotions. Yeah, it just depends. In class, I usually do it like one theme at a time, like one on sadness or one on, you know, that can go to with grief or one on fear or something like that, because I think it helps to get at that more nuanced emotions on that range. Whereas if we keep it a bunch of different emotions, a lot of times people might be able to plot five or six, but then when it comes to the nuance, it's more of a struggle. But that just depends. And if you're working with somebody one-on-one, you get to see what they're interested in. However, we could do one with positive emotions where, you know, let's say we're doing one on happiness or joy, and the most intense side of it can lead to mania, right? Which can be very destructive for somebody to live with mania, just depending on the person. And yeah, and then even this, though, we could take this all the way down beyond warmth, and we could start to move into a continuum of pleasure, happiness, contentment, equanimity, right? So it's never ending, really. But yeah, does that answer your question? Yeah, great. Anybody else? Okay, I'll keep going. So I'd love to talk a little bit about how in the practice, we have a constructive and integrative phase and a deconstructive and integrative phase. And so the constructive phase is when we're bringing ourselves home to really integrate all of who we are, on a psychological level, on a physical level, on a spiritual level. It's when we're developing a healthy sense of self. We're constructing a healthy sense of self. So anytime that we're doing the attention, concentration training, and mindfulness, those aspects of the practice, you know, working on the first, I'd say, up through Ananda Maya, we're really building the constructive and integrative part of the practice, right? So this is where we understand, because in meditation, we're really learning to understand the functioning of our mind, the functioning of attention, the functioning of our emotions, the functioning of our bodies, right? The functioning of the ego I, the sense of who we've taken ourselves to be, consciousness even, all the way up through self-awareness and awareness itself. So that's really what we're doing. And we're becoming deeply contemplative to be able to understand these functionings and how they serve us, and to restore them all to their natural functioning. So that we're no longer, hopefully, we're freeing ourselves of some of the rumination, some of the habitual, those habits and conditions, ways that we've learned to be in our life. And we're understanding the role, we're understanding the message that they give to us, and then hopefully we're unwinding them over time, right? And we're becoming freer of the conditioned way that we've always taken ourselves to be. And so we become even more authentic. It's not that we're not authentic now, but there's a spontaneity that comes alive in us and a freedom. And we start to understand and bring the nervous system, the vagal system that's there to help us survive and thrive. It's there to help us connect with others. That comes back to its natural functioning. We get to see it and not judge ourselves when it comes online, you know? That, oh, it's just here, it's just happening. As we do this, as we restore our natural functioning, as we construct a healthy sense of self in this part of the practice, and we integrate that into who we are, what happens is we start to liberate these core parts of ourselves. This that we, you know, we're going to talk about them, I think, tomorrow more. Or maybe the next day, the Brahma Viharas is what they're called, the four great attitudes of yoga, or the four immeasurables in Buddhism is what they're called. So this is joy, equanimity, compassion, loving kindness. But there's other core essential aspects of who we are as human beings: truth, wisdom, curiosity, open, you know, these, and I'm sure you could come up with some as well, but these are liberated, you know, that deep sense of equanimity, deep sense of stillness. And we get to start to feel these essential qualities of who we are come alive. And that's part of that greater sense of spontaneity and freedom, I think. And it's natural. It's a natural functioning that comes online. The four Brahmaviharas, yes, it's joy, compassion, loving kindness, and equanimity. In Sanskrit, it's Maitri Karuna Mudito Upekshanam. We can chant that. I think we have it in the manual. It's in the Yoga Sutras. So what we're also doing when this is happening is we're establishing an intra-connectedness with ourself and an interconnectedness with the world around us, right? So this is the process. When you think about all these proactive ways that we were talking about today, and we'll review them again tomorrow, the proactive ways that we can meet sensations, emotions, beliefs, memories, all these ways, meeting everything as the movement of sensation that opens up from gross to subtle, and we start to feel the energetic flows, which are all there to enable us to fully see ourselves, hear ourselves, have that sense of connection. And then as we feel connected, we can feel that sense of connection in the world and that sense of belonging. We're healing disconnection from ourselves. It's a natural process of healing disconnection from ourselves. I would say disidentification is a natural process of healing disconnection with ourselves, because we're welcoming everything back to be here just as it is, and we're feeling, realizing we're not separate from it, but we're distinct from it. We're not separate because it's arising in us, right? We can feel it. And yet there's this other part of us that's distinct from it, that witnessing presence. Something's arising. I could ask you, are you aware of it? Are you aware of being tired right now? Or are you aware of being, joyful or neutral or annoyed or whatever your state of mind is? And if I asked you at any given moment during the day, are you aware of how you're feeling? What would you say? I got a resounding yes in the studio. Yes. And then I could ask, well, what does awareness feel like? Now, as soon as I ask you that question, we're moving into the deconstructive phase of iRest. Okay? So before we go fully in the deconstructive phase, I want to finish up the constructive phase. So I was saying we heal disconnection. We also heal any sense of dissociation through that natural process of disidentification, because remember, we're not separate from, we're connected with everything. But then as we feel ourselves as a witness or a witnessing awareness or awareness itself, we're going to feel a distinction, but we can always go back and feel the emotion or the sensation or whatever it is that's coming up. So we're not completely separate from it. It's a part of us. It's just arising in something deeper, something broader, something vaster. Right? And then as we welcome all parts of ourselves, we're welcoming ourselves home. We're coming home to who we are. This is all the constructive and integrative phase. We have to integrate this, right? We have to feel into how this feels in this new way to experience ourselves with the fullness of who we are. And then we can ask ourselves, but am I aware of this? Yes. What does awareness feel like? So as we start to shift our attention, so if you think about it, everything that I'm talking about so far in the constructive phase, our attention is focusing on something that's changing, isn't it? Right? A changing sensation, a changing object. I'm looking at other people in the room. They're coming and going. A changing thought. A changing emotion, a changing sound. It's an object, right? As soon as our attention is freed, when we feel into something and through disidentification, the attention is freed, we have two choices at that point. and this may be an unconscious choice that it just happens in meditation. One is that our attention goes to the next changing object in our that comes through our body mind, right? So we felt into something, we feel, and next thing you know, oh, well, here's a new thought or here's a new sensation. And that may be what we need to meet. Or it's like we're peeling back the layers of an onion. We start with the emotion and then we peel it back. And now there's a memory that arises with it. We peel that back. Now there's a core belief that we've taken to be true, right? So it may be that these movements are what our attention focuses on. And that would still be in the constructive phase. Does that make sense to everybody? But here's the second option. When our attention is freed and we've felt into something and we've met it in meditation long enough and our attention is completely free, the second option is that attention turns back in on itself. Because it's turning back into this that is the seer. Remember, Jennifer was talking about Purusha earlier. The seer, this unchanging witness, witnessing presence, seer, awareness. I'm going to put that on a continuum and walk you through that tomorrow. Now, that's deconstructing our sense of separation as soon as we start to inquire into this, right? So now we're deconstructing that separate sense of self. First, we feel ourselves as a witness. And as a witness, I'm going to walk through this quickly. We're going to do it more experientially again tomorrow. As a witness, and you can do this, you can play around with this experientially now a little bit. You know, you can take an object that is in front of you. It could be, for those of you at home, it could be me on your computer screen, or it could be something else in the room that you're looking at. You know, you could take any object, me, the stool, anything that you're seeing. You could look at the object, sense it, notice it, its texture, what it looks like. And then shift your attention so that the object's still there, but now you're feeling yourself more as the witness of the object. What's it like to feel yourself as the witness? Okay, so at first someone's describing feeling separate. So that's that distinction, but you're not completely separate because you can still kind of feel into it, right? But the initial sense is, oh, it's out there and witness is here, right? So that's the sense. Mm-hmm. What else? There's lots of ways we can feel ourselves as a witness. There's no wrong way, by the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and because it's not for your head. That's why somebody, Leander was saying, this is hard to wrap my head around. And it's true, it's because we're dropping and we have to feel, we have to shift. We have to shift, don't we, from our thinking mind down to our more of that central core of our body. And feel yourself witnessing. This is the big leap in meditation. So I see some things coming through. Denny Shea, could you maybe say what's coming through the chat when you feel yourself more as a witness?
Yes, we had distance, mm-hmm. non-judgmental, space, observational, stepping back and observing, mm-hmm. witnessing feels safer, protected, mm-hmm. and curious.
Great. Thank you for all of those. So yeah, so we can start to feel, perhaps we feel it more in our body, right? We feel more embodied, more here. We're a witness. It's like it's up on the stage or it's up on a screen, quite literally, right? And here we are. Whew. But then what happens is we're deconstructing this separate sense of self, because being our personality and our ego eye, it's what we find in meditation is it's just another thought. Aren't you aware of the sense of your personality or the sense of being me? So if you're aware of it, again, what is this that's aware? And so we can put this on a continuum. We go from witness, and now what's it like to shift from being a witness into witnessing? And I'm doing that intentional. We're moving from a noun to a verb. So for a moment, is there a question or a comment? A comment, yeah. So for a moment, just feel the difference in that shift of being a witness, someone who's a witness, to witnessing, or a witnessing presence. And what's the difference between being a witness and being a witnessing presence for you, your firsthand experience? I think I see more action. I think the other one was more observing. Is that right, Denny Shea?
More engagement in the observation, more action.
Mm-hmm.
Stable.
Mm-hmm.
Presence meant no boundaries. We are one.
Mm-hmm. Watch what happens to your peripheral vision too. I don't know about you, but for me, when I'm a witness, it's like I'm here, I'm really embodied, and there's more of a like boom, boom. But when I drop into more of a witnessing or a witnessing presence, it's like the aperture opens up. And more of the peripheral comes into view, and there's a softening that happens. Yeah, Kristen.
I don't know if this is going to make sense, but earlier when I was
Can Janice, do you mind running the mic over to her? Thank you. We're going to have the mic so that they can hear you.
This is something I noticed earlier working with Barbara. So normally I think of it like I'm watching a movie of myself, but kind of tapping into that felt sense, I was thinking about the concept from earlier of like the changing versus the unchanging. So for me, it like I became the unchanging, witnessing the changing part of myself and like knowing it was the same thing, but also different, if that makes any sense.
It's a great way to put it. And that difference is the distinction that I'm talking about, right? There's something here that's distinct from what's changing. And it is unchanging. Absolutely. And you don't have to know the answer yet. That's the beauty of this. This is for you to inquire. Remember, we want you to see what your firsthand experience is. So I've got some reports from the field. I can share what it's like for me. Jennifer can share for what it's like for her. But the importance is that you get to see what it's like for you. Yeah, I think Mimi was going to take a comment. Do you mind running the mic over there? I'm going to make you work a little, Janice. Thanks.
I'm ready to work. I wanted to say that it felt kind of freeing just to step back and let that happen, but be able to still view it. But it was freeing for me as a witness. There was attachment, but there was an attachment so that that could just unfold in front of me. Okay.
Exactly. Because ultimately that's what's happening. We're not controlling any of this. And so you're really seeing the truth that it is all free. It is free to happen. It is a happening. It is an arising that's happening. That's what life is. And then here's this, right? Oh, there's the body mind that has reactions, but there's something else here that's still, that might become more expansive and spacious. Then the next part of the continuum of this is where we feel ourselves as a witnessing presence and we open more up as being, right? So being can also feel localized, but then we start to feel expansive. We open up in all directions, and being opens even more into awareness. Awareness can open up into pure awareness, and now we're going into the very subtle realms of our essential nature. So we call this the continuum of awareness. It's a continuum of our essential nature. So that you can see where now all the emphasis is no longer on what's changing. Now the emphasis is on what's unchanging. What is this that's inseparable? What is this wholeness? What is this mystery? It doesn't matter. Like Mimi said, that stuff, it's free. You'll hear me in meditation, especially tomorrow. Or if you've joined me on the Sangha sessions or sometimes in a recording or something, you'll hear me say, at a certain point where we're really opening up as being our awareness, I'll say, you know, and notice how the thoughts are moving by and they're like a wisp of smoke from a stick of incense in the corner of the room. You know how when there's smoke coming from incense, it's this beautiful dance. It's just blowing in the wind. We don't know what it's doing. It's so light. It's just back there, but you're like the space of the room. It's free. There's a certain point where our attention is really turned and absorbed more and more as this field of being. And even though thoughts are happening, they're not even being registered, right? That's when we unhook attention from them and attention is just turned back in on itself. Attention, by the way, moves. Awareness doesn't move. It's unchanging. It's ever present, right? And then we can start to really open as the field of being. And I'll do this in the afternoon meditation. So I'm not going to do it so much experientially right now in this instance, because I have some more material I'd like to get through with you. And I would like to have some time for questions if possible. But when we explore being, I'm really going to explore, like Jennifer started it this morning with Ardha Sharira, which is that split body breathing where she was breathing on one side and then the other, and you were feeling that energetically. Well, we can do that and we can start to feel how our borders and boundaries are a little porous, right? I talked about it the first night. And like if we exhale, we can feel out like into the space, not like into the space, but actually into the space we're sensing. And it, as we're opening, as awareness itself actually, or for some of us, this field of being, we'll realize that there's something here that's pervading the walls. It pervades everything because it's the substratum of everything. Then we can feel out into the right. We can feel back behind. We can feel out in front. We can feel above and below and in all directions. And our body, we really feel that our body is, we don't deny the localized body, but its solidity breaks open and we feel this greater body of great presence that's everywhere. It's non-directional, actually. It's very spacious. And so as we're opening as being and then later on awareness, this is what we can open into. This unchanging suchness or essence. Being has a viscosity or a softness to it. That's where we can feel the all the ways that the essential qualities come through, like compassion, joy, all of that comes through in being. But awareness itself is qualityless. It has no qualities that we can hang on it. It's unconditioned. But we'll talk about more about that tomorrow. But this is all part of the deconstructive and integrative phase. So the deconstructive phase is when we're deconstructing that separate sense of self and we're opening up into our non-separate wholeness, something here that's interconnected and ever-present. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. So the emphasis on constructive phase is what's arising in awareness. It's all the things that are coming and going. The emphasis during the deconstructive phase is where we're opening into being or awareness, and we're free of any of those objects. We're not really attending to them any longer. And so when would we be opening into the deconstructive phase? Well, potentially anytime we even drop in the inner resource. Because the deepest inner resource is being and awareness. So we have the capacity to be shifting from what changes to what's unchanging. Anytime we offer to feel two opposites at the same time, which I'm going to talk about here in a moment, it has a potential to open up into this greater field of being or awareness. if we feel two parts of our body at the same time, it has the capacity to open up this greater field. When we feel ourselves in all directions, like I was talking about, and we'll do in a couple more meditations, that is opening us potentially into the deconstructive phase. And it's interwoven throughout the practice. Because we're opening people, that's the potential, is people open to their essential nature. Now, not everybody's here to do that. Most everybody's here to feel better, you know? People come to meditation because they want to feel better or they want to feel calmer. And that's okay. And so having a little felt sense of being, and they'll land there, that'll feel good. And that's where they want to land. And they'll say, thank you very much. I feel more connected with my emotions. I feel freer. I've got what I need. And they'll, you know, maybe they won't come to class as often. But then there's going to be some other people that they stick around for the long haul. And they're like, wait a minute. What is this being? What is this that we're doing? There's something else here. And they want to really dive into it. So, and we want to make sure that our teachers understand the fullness of this, so that if somebody comes up to you after class, because if you understand this, dropping into body sensing can open us right up into being in awareness. If I go in, what's going to happen is I'm going to realize there's something really spacious in the middle of this solidity, and I have the potential to feel my expansive nature. And we want you to know, if that happens, you can help somebody ground. You'll be able to talk to them maybe for the first time in their life about something that they've tapped into before that nobody knew quite what it was. And you'd be like, this is great, you know, and help normalize this for them. Okay, so a few of the tools that we use with iRest, you know, we were talking about welcoming, how everything's a messenger. We meet everything as sensation. We also have, as one of these core principles underneath, what the kind of is the S, kind of like it's embedded underneath our offering, right, is non-judging. So we're not seeing something as good or bad. It's just, is it helping us to hit the mark, so to speak? Is it helping us to come into harmony with that feeling of being in harmony with life or being in harmony with our inner resource? Or is it bringing us out of harmony? So we're not judging it. We're just feeling into it and seeing how's this? Do I feel more in sync, or am I feeling really out of sync? And then we can welcome it as a messenger, because it's likely going to give us some action that we want to take in the world. When we meet emotions, they're often coming to us to help us with some action that we need to take. I want to do this because I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling angry. Maybe what we need, if we've been really effusive with our anger and we've been really loud and demonstrative, maybe the message is we need to be more quiet and not be so demonstrative. Sometimes the action is an inaction, but it's often leading us into some action in the world. So non-judging allows us to get to that deeper message, right? Because there could be, if we have a really challenging emotion like anger, it could be that really all it is a wisdom that's just been off, right? It's like, I have a phrase for this. It's in here. Hold on. It's close. It's right here. Where is it? Oh, degraded wisdom, misguided wisdom, right? It's so what happens is if we stay with, let's say, anger, and at first it feels like we're angry at another person, but we bring it into our meditation, or we're just angry because really this is tools for life. So it's a way to meet anger in the moment. And maybe it's, we felt angry and we're just kind of unpacking it and feeling it in our body. Maybe we're sitting in our office at work or something, and we have a chance to feel into it. And we at first are blaming the other person. We think we're mad at them because of something that they did. And maybe they did do something that was pretty unwise or unskillful. But if we keep going deeper in and we're feeling it and feeling it, we may find that underneath it, we actually realize that we went beyond our boundary with this person. Now we're getting to some deeper wisdom that was misguided or missed or degraded. And now we may realize that we just said yes to something that we really needed to say no to, right? Or we got angrier and angrier because we were done with the conversation and we stayed beyond our boundary and this person kept engaging and we didn't hold our own boundary to be able to say, you know what, I appreciate that you want to keep talking about this right now, but I need a break. And so that could have been part of what was fueling our anger. And now it allows us to take that deeper wisdom, that kernel of truth that we've just found, and now we get a do-over. We can listen to this in the future and understand it maybe more clearly or sooner so that we can listen to ourselves and set that boundary. Or maybe we need to go back to the person and say, you know what, how I said I would take on that project, I'm not going to be able to do it. Or I'll do it for you, but we need to check in together in 3 months because I don't have any room for it right now. So can you see how if we were judging something as good or bad, we might miss that whole inner process? But if we're non-judging and we can listen to it and unpack it, we can see, oh, this is taking us, I don't feel good inside. Something feels off. This doesn't feel right. Right? Well, what needs to happen for us to come back to feeling right? That it just feels right. And we start to feel in harmony, in alignment with ourselves and with life. So when we're non-judging, this also deactivates that reactionary part of ourselves, that recursive negative loop that just keeps going and going and going. When we step back from judging and we're in that non-judging presence, we have a whole new view of that that's kind of unwinding itself, right? And we have a capacity to step out of that and deactivate it. And now we get to unwind that and see what's deeper there. And when we're in harmony with ourselves, if we're in this non-judgmental place, part of what we could bring to our practice of meditation and our practice of just meeting ourselves is just, what does it mean to feel safe with myself? Even though the world out there, getting at what Mimi was sharing earlier, that she realizes when we were opening up as a witnessing presence, that, oh my gosh, wait, all this is just happening. I don't have to control it. I can feel into it, but I'm also distinct from it. This is all happening. So that also means that the world sometimes is not a safe place. I don't have to tell you all this. We all know that the world isn't always safe. But I can start to feel safe and at home with myself, right? If I can start to understand these movements of what feels right, what are the boundaries I need to set? What are my time boundaries, my emotional boundaries, my physical boundaries? How do I want to live my life in such a way that I feel safe with myself? What's my thinking like? Am I hard on myself? Am I cruel to myself with my internal dialogue? Am I compassionate? Do I bring to mind that I'm actually always doing the best I know how? Right? So then I can start to feel more that I'm definitely saying yes when I mean yes, no when I mean no, and I'm not betraying myself any longer. I can start to trust myself. That's what this practice has to offer. So that's the non-judging piece. The next one is always doing the best we know how. So that's something we can carry in that, you know, at any given time, our conditioning is always present. We can't help it. That just happens from being human. We've got conditioning culturally. We have conditioning from our family, from our life experiences. The conditioning is always present. But we can start to drop into ourselves as this witness or witnessing presence or being. We realize there's this other part of us that's free of the conditioning. And really, we're always doing the best we know how. And at any given moment, we're going to try to pair it with the perfect response. The more sensitive you are, and the more you're able to track sensorially what's happening in you, the more that you're going to be able to recognize in any given moment, you can pair it with the perfect response. Now, the very next moment, the perfect response might look very different. But that's okay. Each moment, we're doing the best we know how. We're meeting it with a perfect response. That doesn't mean we're perfect. That means this response is meeting this moment as best we can. And that coincides, like I was saying before, being safe in an unsafe world. And then the other piece that I wanted to talk about, Jennifer went over law of awareness. And just as a reminder that just means that everything that's changing, everything that's made of nature goes through those five aspects of birth, growth, stabilizes, decays, and dissolves, right? And that whatever is fully welcome to go through those five movements of birth, growth, maintenance, decay, and death or dissolution, whatever's able to go through that fully, we're going to move beyond. Because at the end of it, it frees attention. So it's like a little bubble that comes to the top of a still lake. And as we stay with something, and it's fully met, then just like a bubble at the top of the lake, poof, it dissolves. It pops and it dissolves. That's what happens with different things, different movements in us during meditation. And when we're with it fully, then we move beyond it naturally, not by trying to fix it or change it. It's through allowing it to fully flower, fully blossom to the degree that we can meet it. And if it becomes overwhelming, that's why we have the inner resource. Even if the inner resource is just in this moment, I can find a sense of okayness. That is enough. To start, that is then your inner resource in that moment. And maybe that it's that your right palm feels okay. And that's what you feel. So we can always weave in the inner resource. So I'd like to talk about opposites, because opposites are a really important part of the practice of iRest. And we have this law of opposites, which is also, you know, if we're willing to meet one aspect, one emotion, one belief, one memory, one sensation, inevitably, its opposite's going to arise. That's just how it works. It may take a few seconds. It may take a few days. But eventually the opposite is going to arise. I'd be curious, and I'd bet money that there's some group, at least one, if not several groups, that practiced the Manomaya co-meditation dyad worksheet today with your one-on-one practice. And as you are opening into emotion, I would bet that somewhere in some of the groups, an opposite emotion naturally arose. I already see people in the room shaking, nodding their head yes. They naturally arise. That's the law of when we meet something fully, and it kind of goes in similar to the law of awareness, but when we meet it fully, this is a little bit different though, because if we're this field of presence, and presence is the impersonal field, that's presence. It's the field, the unchanging field that we are. That's presence. Remember? Resonance is the vibration that happens within the field that we can feel, but presence is the field. So if we've got this unchanging field that gives rise to everything in the entire cosmos, then within the field, there's going to be a continuum, just like we built earlier, and we can have opposites that arise on it. Now, an opposite may not be a polar opposite. It doesn't mean that I feel angry and then all of a sudden I feel happy. An opposite could be neutrality. And an opposite for one person that really struggles with rage, and they feel rage a lot in their life, their opposite in the moment may be that they're feeling annoyed. Now, that wouldn't be everybody's opposite, but for them, that might feel like a pretty good opposite because they've been living their life feeling enraged for so long that even that lesser continuum can begin to feel like the opposite for them at the moment. So then eventually they're widening their experience, right? But opposites come up, and we move when we welcome opposites, and we're going to do this in the worksheet tomorrow. So at the end of the day, we'll give you the list of things that you can look over tomorrow. And the next worksheet for co-meditation dyads is on beliefs or thoughts or memories. And we work with opposites. So you feel one, you feel how it resonates in your body, or it could be opposites of sensation. Then you feel the other. Then you go back and you feel the first one again. Then you feel the other. Then you feel both at the same time. Why are we doing this? When we feel both at the same time, we have the potential to go through the horns of the dilemma. So there may be a whole new insight that reveals itself. Or we may open into something altogether different, like being. Right? So the other thing, the other way that you can think of law of opposites is that, and this is in the manual, if you were, this is called wave mechanics, and if you were standing high up and you dropped a pebble of a certain weight into a lake, and it would start to do concentric circles, and if you dropped something with the same weight, when they came together, the concentric waves would get larger. But if you put them in slightly different and different weights, when they come together, they actually cancel each other out. And it will become more still. So even though we're not trying to get, we're not using opposites to get rid of, what may happen is it actually dissolves, or we find that what we were first feeling isn't as intense when we have felt the opposite and then feel both at the same time. So they may harmonize. Now, once either you or your students figure this out, they love it. And we all go through a period where we try to feel opposites to get rid of something. But if we're welcoming in an opposite to get rid of it, it doesn't sound very welcoming, does it? It's like if we welcome somebody to our front door and we say, "Oh my gosh, I'm so good to see you." And then we slam the door in their face. You know, it's like, "Oh, okay, anger, you want to come in? I'm going to welcome you. You can come in this far." And then, "Nope, okay, I'm going to go feel an opposite," right? So if we use them to get rid of, or we're trying to harmonize, it's going to fail us. But if we truly welcome something to the degree that we can, because sometimes we do need to meet something else because it's too intense. And that's wise. We want to be skillful. We don't want to overwhelm or flood ourselves. But it's the intention is not to fix or change. And their opposites are designed when we feel one and then we feel the other, it gives us perspective. So they're designed to enable insight to emerge. Because if we just stay holed up or kind of fused with one opposite, then we only see certain aspects of it, right? And so it gives us the capacity that something new may emerge when we feel into the opposite and then we come back, we may have a whole new perspective. So new insight, new perspective. It also helps us to build resilience and flexibility, creativity by welcoming in opposites to meet life's challenges. Sometimes people will say, "Well, I'm feeling good. Like it's a positive emotion that I'm feeling. Why would I want to welcome in the opposite?" Well, first of all, you might not. So just because we're working with opposites doesn't mean you have to do it, right? However, there is something to be said for feeling into something positive. Let's say you're meeting joy or pleasure or delight or something, or wonder, like I was earlier staring at Mount Rainier. But if we weave in an opposite, it's like it allows us to build some resilience so that if we are having a great day and then all of a sudden something jarring happens or something upsetting happens, we can meet it and we can have a greater resilience and flexibility when meeting higher states of stress in everyday life. I'm telling you, it's from this practice that allowed me to meet that moment when the car wouldn't start the other day. I mean, it was really not that stressful at all. It was just like, oh, okay. Trust me, 10 years ago, that would not have been the response of Stephanie. So the benefits of the opposites, what I just went through is the benefits of the opposites. We're able to find insight. We're able to see new information. We're able to build resilience and flexibility. And it restores a sense of harmony over time. So those are all the benefits. So I have a few moments, not as many as I thought, but I'd love to open it up for questions. And this could be questions that are out for you, those of you at home, or questions for anybody here, any points of clarification from anything I've shared about constructive, deconstructive opposites, why we work with them.
Stephanie, it's quiet over here at the moment.
Great. I have 3 minutes. Maybe, is there a question from, there's a question here. Hold on just a second.
Okay, so I'm just curious from the kind of spectrum of witness and witnessing, being and awareness. You just have to practice. I mean, what's the trick? Not the trick, but like, really, I mean, I can't wrap my head around it, which is fine. And I believe it, but like, how do I get there?
Yeah, it's practice. It is practice. And it's listening to different voices, offering it in different ways. It's trying it on at home. You know, we'll be doing it again tomorrow a few times. I'll offer it in the meditation at the end of the day for you to experience it. And you get to just see what happens and start to just notice, what's it like to feel like a witness? Does it feel different to feel witnessing? What does that even mean? To go from being a noun to being a verb. It may help as I experientially help work with feeling out in all directions, left side, right side, front side, back side, up back, and below. And you start to feel more of an expansiveness, and then try on, what's the difference between witnessing and just being here, right? What's it like to feel that more, contained in my body, localized in my body, versus when I start to feel out and I feel a bit more spacious? How does that feel different? So I would say the key to this is curiosity, interest and curiosity. And then you're exploring it, not just in meditation, but in just different moments when you're washing the dishes. You know, what's it like to drop down into being when you're washing the dishes? What's it like to drop down into being when you're in an argument with your partner or your parent or your child? That's an experiment worth running. To literally feel yourself drop down from your head to pause, first of all, feel yourself dropping from your thinking mind down into your feeling heart, or down into the solar plexus, or wherever you feel that heart-centeredness. It doesn't always land in the heart for all of us. And then feel out, feel that interconnectedness. It works for me every single time. It's invaluable And it's really interesting to see what it's like to feel ourselves as that, because this continuum, by the way, doesn't start with being the witness. It starts as feeling our separate sense of self. It starts with the ego. Stephanie talking to Leandra, right? Stephanie arguing with my partner. Separate. As soon as I drop down into the heart, now we're not separate. And I can feel that feeling up in my head or the contraction. We can all feel what that's like when we're frustrated or we're having, you know, a bit of a conflict. Feel it. We're not denying it. And then what's it like to weave in being or your inner resource? Run the experiment. It's all related. And it unfolds over time. So why don't we pause here, take a break, hand it back over to Denny Shea, and we'll come back at 3:15 Pacific time. Thank you, everybody.